Hi, welcome to another edition of A Responsible Day. Today's responsible is for Rosh Chodesh Sivan, the first day of the month of Sivan, and we're going to see a surprising thing in Ravad Yosef. This is Shut Yabia Omer, Chelek Chet, Volume 8, Evan Ezer, Siman Chaf Vav, the Evan Ezer section, responsible or chapter number 26. The responsible is dated Rosh Chodesh Sivan, the first day of the month of Sivan of Tavshin Lamed Dalet of 1974, which is a benefit to us because it provides us the opportunity to learn some Torah from Rav Ovadia Yosef. Let's remember to start by thanking Rabbi Jacob Abramowitz, David Hachhauser, and the OU for putting the Shirim online and making them available to you. This responsum is a reply to Rav Yitzchak Yedidya Frankel, who was at the time the Rav HaRashi, the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv Yafo. He is perhaps more known today because he is the father-in-law, or was the father-in-law of Yisrael, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau, who was the chief rabbi of Israel, the Ashkenazi chief rabbi of Israel, and then later returned to being the Ashkenazi chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, as he had been before he'd been chief rabbi of Israel, and who has this remarkable life story that he told in a book that's available in Hebrew and English. I forget what it's called, but it's a remarkable story because he was in the concentration camps like an 8-year-old child, and his older brother, who later became an Israeli politician and diplomat, Naftali Lau Lavi, took care of him in the concentration camps. It's an unbelievable story. In any case, his father-in-law was Rabbi Yitzchak Yedidya Frankel, was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, and he's the Ashkenazi rabbi of Tel Aviv. He writes to Ravadia Yosef about a couple in his Tel Aviv community, a man named Avram Sharabi, not all responsible, always name people, Avram Sharabi, who is from Sephardic origin, who sadly his brother had passed away without children, and this Avram Sharabi wants to perform Yibum. He wants to marry the widow, whose name is Juliet Sharabi. Right, so she's the widow of a man. He wants to do Yibum. She wants to do Yibum. That's not the issue. Okay, so the couple want to do it. They, you know, there's a pasuk in the Torah. Torah says that's what should happen when, sadly, a man passes away without children. The widow should marry one of the brothers, and the first child they have, will be, in some sense, a continuation of the name of the person who had passed away. Both the man and the woman are interested in doing so. They're from not just Sephardic communities, but Edot Mizrach, meaning like Syria or Iraq, from the Middle Eastern communities of Sephardic communities, who accept the rulings of the Rambam and of the Shulchan Aruch. And if you look in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, they say that Yibum is the preferable form of reacting to this situation. Two options are Yibum and Chalitza. Yibum is where the brother marries the woman. Chalitza is where they do a ceremony where he claims he does not want to marry her, and then she spits in a shoe, and she's now free to marry other people. So Rabbi Frankel says, I would sort of think to do what the Shulchan Aruch says and let them get married, because now Rabbi Yosef throws in that they think of the Shulchan Aruch as Marana De'atra, which is such an interesting concept, and I'm not questioning the concept, but I'm saying the ramifications of that concept would be huge. And even Rabbi Yosef is not going to take all the ramifications. The ramification would be that anybody who lives in Israel should follow the Pesachim of the Shulchan Aruch and should dispense with their Ashkenazic customs, right? So that's not what he's going to say. He's saying, Av she'en kein ha-minhag Ashkenazim she'yotzim biyad Ramah. He says, our Ashkenazic brethren, they follow the Ramah, and he's fine with that. Now, yotzim biyad Ramah is a play on words, because when the Jews leave Egypt at the beginning of Parashat B'Shalach, the Pasuk says, the Jews are yotzim biyad Ramah, which would be Resh Mem Hei. The word is ended with, played at the end with a hey, and Ramah is Moshe Isserlis with an aleph, but it's a pun that they yotzim biyad Ramah with their thing. But, and so the Ramah held, Ashkenazic sources held, that Chalitza was preferable. So, for reasons of the Gemara, we're not going to go through the whole Gemara together. There is an ambiguous passage in the Gemara as to what we now, it's clear in the Torah's time that Yibum was preferred. Question is, there's a Mishnah and a whole discussion in the Gemara, and then we showed him on it as to what happens in the following times, already starting the time of the Mishnah. There's some indication that the rabbis at the time of Mishnah were already somewhat leery of the institution of Yibum as people would practice it themselves, and therefore preferred Chalitza. There were those who disagreed. There were those who read the Gemara differently and understood the conclusion of the Mishnah and the Gemara differently. And that's how you end up with a split in Psak, split in rulings between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. That's piece one of the issue at hand, right? So this Yitzchak Yedidya Frankel, for all that he's an Ashkenazi, he says, but this is an Edot Mizrach couple, meaning they're at least Sephardi, if not more than Sephardi, because they are from the Middle Eastern communities, Iraq, wherever they're from, he wants to let them do Yibum. It's true, he's an Ashkenazic rabbi, and the Ashkenazic psak of the Rambam is that we don't do Yibum. More than that, on the 21st day of Shvat of Tovshin Yud, on the 21st day of Shvat of 1950, the chief rabbinate of Israel, and this is quoted in Heichal Yitzchak in the book of Tshuvot of Rav Yitzchak Herzog, and it was signed by not just Rav Herzog, but also by Rav Uziel. We're going to talk about Rav Uziel a lot. This responsum here is in a lot of ways going to be a reaction to things that Rav Uziel did. And they said that all of the inhabitants of the state of Israel in 1950 and all those who come to Israel from now on and forward should not perform Yibum. Now, we can speculate about why that is, and Rav Yosef will talk a little bit about it later on, but I think fundamentally they were worried about, to some extent, about... They were worried, we'll see, the Rav Yosef was going to talk about, they were worried about bringing together the customs under one rubric, and they couldn't imagine that Ashkenazim would be willing to allow for Yibum. So they said, okay, nobody does Yibum anymore. If I had to guess, I would think they also worried that it would look, that there was something that looked bad if the Jews in Israel all of a sudden went back to what, to modern Western eyes, might seem like a primitive custom, and they thought it would be better just to avoid the problem. I think there were problems with, as Yemenite Jews were coming to Israel, and they did Yibum, and they did other things, they wanted to try to get some of those customs out of the way for various reasons. I think there's some of that. But the point is, this Rav Frankel is turning to Rav Yosef in 1974, because he says, because Rav Yosef says, you remember that when I was chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, the Sephardic chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, Vafo, Asiti Ma'asen Negad HaTakana, I disregarded that ruling of 1950 of the chief rabbinate, and when couples from Edot Mizrach, or Yemenites, came before me, and they wanted to perform Yibum, meaning a brother of a deceased man and the widow came and said, the Torah tells us to do Yibum, we feel bad for this brother, we would like to do Yibum, I not only performed the ceremony, I encouraged them to do so, and I encouraged them to do so to follow the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch, they should do Yibum. Says Rav Yitzchak Frankel, says he's going to bring it to Rav Yosef, let him be the one to decide. He's an Ashkenazi rabbi, he's not going to decide it. He wants Rav Yosef to decide it. So, Rav Yosef points out that he has a long tshuva that we're not going to get a chance to see today, from the month of Tammuz of Tovshin Yud Aleph, 1951, reacting to the chief rabbinate's decision. He says, and I went on at great length, lidchot b'shtei yadayim, to push it with two hands, meaning to firmly push it away, to say they were wrong, and it's in Shu'ya B'Omer in the sixth volume in the Ebenezer section in responsum 14, if you want to look it up. Volume 6, responsum 14. I just looked it up for myself, and it's a fairly lengthy responsum, so we wouldn't get a chance to get to it. But he's going to give us the upshot. The upshot is, he says, I went through the opinions of the Rishonim, and I showed that a majority of the Rishonim, the early authorities, the authorities who lived, let's say, between the year around in the non-Jewish calendar, 1000 and 1550, let's say, the majority of them held that Yibum is the preferable act. Meaning already, so you say to me in the Mishnah, the Gemara, raised the possibility that we should prefer Chalitza. He says, but I went through the Sugya, I went through the authorities, and the majority of them hold that Yibum is preferable. So he gives the names, like he's a big lister of Rav Yosef, right? Shiel Tot, and the Riff, and the Rambam, and the Ravid, the Rashbam. So the Rashbam is important because he's an Ashkenazic authority. The Ramah, that's not the Ramah, our Ramah, that's the Ramah of Meir Halebi Ablafia, who's a Spanish posek, the Ramban, the Rashba, and others. So all of those are in some sense Sephardim, so it's not quite a proof of anything, but it is a lot of them. But that's true, lots of issues then, because the Balei HaTosfot were a minority, and we follow a lot of them. Anyway. They also brought many Achronim who agree. So Achronim is even later. Achronim is going to be like in the 16th and 17th century who are going to agree that we should prefer Yibum. Maram Alashka, the Mabit, the Ranach, the Maram Padua, and then more and more and more. I didn't like give all of them. These were the ones like I knew as relatively famous names, so I included them. And then Shutmish Petish. Well, right, the Re'eim said that mitzvah Yibum is preferable, and went a step further. He points out that the Ramari Taitetzak, Rav Yosef Taitetzak, sadly had a son who passed away without children, and that he, the Mari Taitetzak, in practice told one of its other sons to do Yibum. So that's not just as a theoretical discussion of a sugya in the Gemara. I can show you X authority said he preferred Yibum. That's in his own life. He's actually encouraging and insisting on Yibum. So therefore, says Rav Yosef, Afani Shareti Mitchila Shachalitza Kadem. I'm sorry, that's not him. It's still a quote from the Re'eim, that even though the Re'eim says, I used to rule that we should prefer Chalitza, because of my understanding of the story, yeah, but once the Re'eim does, I change my mind, and I follow the view that Yibum is preferable. So too, the Rivash. went at great length to say that Yibam is certainly the preferable one. Now, it makes sense that Yibam would be preferable because that's one the Torah requires. The Gemara raises this concern that people will have unfortunate, improper motives. You worry a little bit that the brother-in-law, in some sense, either always had his eye on this sister-in-law, or now that it's an option, maybe never didn't always have, but now that it's an option, he's excited about it for reasons that have nothing to do with the favor being done to the deceased brother. That's all the worries that there were. But fundamentally, the Torah, which could have known that as well, said, no, but the mitzvah is Yibam. So too the Radvaz writes. So the Radvaz lives in the late 1400s. Late 1500s. The Radvaz writes, I was right both ones. He was born in 1479 and passed away in 1573. So he lives in the late 1400s and the late 1500s, or at least the middle to late 1500s. So the Radvaz writes, the custom in all of, and now the list is important, in all of Sfarad, Spain, Catalonia, which is part of Spain, Provence, which is to the south of France, and all of the west, and all of Eretz Israel, all the land of Israel, all of Egypt, all of Syria, he says domestic, all of Togarma, which is Turkey, right, and all of the Glilot Asher Shamanu, all of the places where there are Jews that we've heard of, they follow that we keep Mitzvot Yibum. And then the Radvaz claims that even in Ashkenaz, in Germany, they've kept Yibum, as Rabbeinu Peretz writes. So Rav Vaid Yosef now says, sorry, the Radvaz continues and says, who's going to rule against all of that? And even though he says it's true, Rashi and the Tosfos think that we paskin, we rule like Abba Shaul, and we prefer Chalitza to Yibum. Abba Shaul is the one in the Mishnah who says that used to be that we would follow Mitzvah Yibum Kodem, that we prefer Yibum, but now they preferred, he thought that the Chazal preferred Chalitza. So the Radvaz says, but it's clear that the majority of everybody and the important people all think that Yibum is Kodetz. You have to do that. So Rav Yosef says, look, there, that's what you have to do. And Mari Adarbi says that that's true of Salonika as well. And in practice, it's a big city with lots of Torah scholars. And every day, it says, they have Yibum going on. I don't know if it's every day. I hope it's not every day because that means that people are passing away every day without children. But nobody's complaining. That's the way you do it. So that's the first step. The first step is, and this, I think, is a convincing step of Rav Yosef. Later on, I'm going to allow myself a little more leeway than usual to point out what seemed to me perhaps to be questions or concerns in Rav Yosef's reasoning. But the first step is very strong, which is that he's saying there's lots and lots of halachic support for the idea of performing Yibum. So I don't know how it is. He basically is going to say, I don't know how it is. They came to decide they're going to prohibit it when really that's the easier position. I mean, you want to tell me we should carve out an exception for Ashkenazim to refrain from Yibum because they choose to follow Rashi and the Tosfos, who are in the minority of the halachic conversation throughout the ages. That's a discussion to be had, and I think Rav Yosef is comfortable that we'll get to it. But if you just approach the sugya, approach the discussion and say, what's the halacha as the conversation of Torah throughout the generations has given it to us, he says the answer is that we prefer Yibum. So you're going to tell me we're not going to coerce Yibum, we're not going to push Yibum on people unless they want it. It's a discussion. But that you're going to tell me they can't do Yibum. So here's Me'etayesh Lit Moa. Al-Majik of the Urban Yosef. I understand what these chief rabbis are thinking. To prohibit Yibum? Especially, he says, I don't understand what Rav Uziel was doing. How could it be that Rav Uziel decided to contradict, right, all or most or the, you know, a large group of poskim, including Maran, including the Shulchan Aruch, who wrote his book in Eretz Yisrael and is therefore in some important sense the posek for Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Avad Yosef writes, V'amina v'lo mistifina she'en kol tokef l'haskamatam. I'll say it, I'm not embarrassed to say it, that I don't think that their decision has any validity. And to the contrary, I think that it's an important obligation to encourage and to strengthen the hands of those who want to do Yibum because they're fulfilling a mitzvah of the Torah, and that's what I think they should do. Now, he's going to explain a little bit of Uziel's thinking, and I think he's right, and we'll get to it in a second. But I want to just pause here and think about this question. It really it concerns me, and it troubles me. Rav Yosef was a giant. He knew more than almost anybody ever, and he cared a lot, and he was concerned for people's welfare, and he was helpful, and he gave his time and energy to helping the Jewish people. So anything I'm about to say is in no way meant as any kind of an overall criticism of what you say in any way whatsoever. But I think here you run into this very interesting issue, which is, so let's also make clear before I say what I'm about to say, the Institute's chief rabbinate, and we know it today when it's a whole much different set of problems and issues, but the Institute's chief rabbinate, the early functioning of the state, was trying to get back to some kind of a form of institutional authority of Torah, that there be a central Torah location which would make decisions for the entire Jewish people, or at least the Jewish people of Eretz Yisrael, which in a lot of senses is the entire Jewish people. The Gemara in Horiot that we talk about, because Rav Lichtenstein, Sechet Zeli Vach, used to quote a lot, right? Hani Ikrei Kahal, the people of Israel are considered the real community of the Jewish people. So you're trying to recreate this idea of a centralized Torah authority. So it's going to make mistakes along the way. It might need to change its mind. You might want to argue it out. But to me, it's reminiscent of when you'd have a Sanhedrin. So you'd have a Sanhedrin. You'd think, what happens if one great Torah scholar, easily of rank to be on the Sanhedrin, thinks they got a decision wrong and comes to the Sanhedrin and says, I think you got your decision wrong. They argue it out. And the Sanhedrin says, no, this is our decision. So if that person goes, and Rav Yosef is going to say openly that he did and he will continue to do so, rule and practice against that decision, so had there been a Sanhedrin, that would be the classic case of a Zaken Mamre, of a rebellious elder. So the answer is here that he's not nearly that, because the chief rabbi was not nearly a Sanhedrin, and that helps him a great deal. But in terms of the readiness to say, their decision binds me by virtue of their office, not by virtue of the fact they were right, but it binds us that I'm not allowed to violate it, that he's not willing to do. And we're going to see others who are not willing to do that, and then the question becomes, what does that say about our readiness to listen to the Sanhedrin? Meaning, is it impossible that had Rav Herzog and Rav Uziel had an actual Sanhedrin, of actual Musmachim, actual, you know, we renewed the ordination somehow, and they had a Sanhedrin of 70, is it impossible that a Sanhedrin that 50 out of those 70, 40 out of those 70, 37 out of those 70, would agree that we're going to make a ruling that we don't do Yibum anymore? So you could tell me, and it might be true, that had been an actual Sanhedrin, and Rav Yosef, we have every reason to think would have been sitting on the Sanhedrin, but remember that 1951, he was 31 years old, so he'd been a young guy. Maybe he'd been sitting on the Sanhedrin anyway, or maybe he wouldn't have yet made it because it was full, but, and then if he had ruled against it in practice in 1965, 1970, what would have happened? So I think this is a hard set of questions. So on the halachic content, he says something that I think is unarguable, is very clear and very correct. On the practice, I think he raises a lot of interesting and important issues for us to think about. So what he says here now is, I have no doubt, and I think he's right, that Rav Uziel was motivated by a desire to reunify the Jewish people. Right? That's what's going on. I mean, you don't want some Jews doing Yibum and looking odd to the Ashkenazic Jews who weren't doing Yibum. And that's at a time, perhaps, when, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I think at the beginning of the State of Israel, there might have been as many Ashkenazim in Israel, or maybe even more Ashkenazim, more Jews of Germanic descent than of Sephardim. I'm not positive what the numbers were. Certainly, after that, it became much more Sephardim, because you had all the Yemenite Jews came, and then Iraqi Jews came in. I think that there became a point, certainly after that, when there were more Sephardim than Ashkenazim. But Rabbi Yosef says, but that's not a tekana, that's not helping the Jewish people, that's a kalkala. That's a destruction, because you're telling them not to keep their practice. Then he tells the interesting, fascinating story. There's a sefer, he says, called Atzvi Yisrael, which tells a story about a gathering of the Mo'aitza HaRabbanit V'Harashit. There was a committee of the chief rabbin. It wasn't just the two chief rabbis. It was a committee of important rabbis in Eretz Yisrael. And they had a committee meeting where Rav Uziel suggested getting rid of Sephardi Shechita in Yerushalayim, because then you could gather all the shochtim, all the ritual slaughters, under one custom and under one practice, and you could unify the practice of it. Now, the important key piece of this discussion, I think, that you don't know, that you have to pay attention to, notice that Uziel is, and I think this in some sense is something very good about him, in another sense is something not as good about him, but he's willing to forego. He's willing to say, let the Sephardim join the Ashkenazim more. And I think that's part of what is the irritant here. Meaning, if the Jews of Eretz Yisrael, or the rabbinic leadership of Eretz Yisrael in the 1950s is saying, we want to unify the people, we're going to find half of the customs and Ashkenazim will have to bow to the Sephardim and do what they do, and half the customs Sephardim will bow to Ashkenazim and do what they do, I think the conversation would have gone differently. But that wasn't the conversation. The conversation was, Rav Uziel was so dedicated to bringing things together, his idea was always, okay, let the Sephardim give it up. And I think that part of what bothered them. In any case, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank was at that meeting, and this is the story as it goes, and he stands up at the meeting and says, even if all the Sephardic rabbis agree, I'm going to gather Sephardic Shoktim, Sephardic ritual slaughterers, and I'm going to make sure they continue Sephardic Shkita, and continue slaughtering meat in the Sephardic practice. And Rabbi Pesach Frank says, Ki al kol eidah lahachazik, he says, every community has to hold on to the customs of its forefathers. That's an important, interesting question that I'm going to return to, but just what's the definition of unity, and to what extent can each community having lots and lots of different customs still be considered unified? Rav Uziel is feeling like the more areas in which practice is the same for everybody, that's the more unified we'll be, and Rav Tzvi Frank on that example is clearly disagreeing. So Rav Uziel returns to the Yibum question, points out that in Shut Mishpatei Uziel, this idea seems to have taken enough hold for Rav Uziel that he says that even those who want to follow the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch, he thinks they have to worry about or think twice about it carefully, because he thinks that the ruling of the Ramah might be more obligatory, because he thinks that we can only follow the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch if we're convinced and if we're sure, if the parties are sure, that they're doing this L'Shem Mitzvah. So L'Shem Mitzvah means that their only motive, we'll get to mixed motives in a second, because Rabbi Yosef is going to address that, but their only motive is to find a way to help a deceased brother in some way establish his continued lineage. But if there's any element of, this is where Vuzil sort of writes and sort of thinks, based on the Gemara, the Ramah eventually Paskin, but the question is whether that really applies to Sephardim as well, to the Shulchan Aruch Pesach. But the worry was, if there's any element in which the brother, the surviving brother, thinks that the widow is, you know, attractive and a nice marriage partner and somebody he would love to have married anyway, were it not for the fact that she was his brother's wife, that would already ruin it. We shouldn't allow a yibum in that situation, because that touches too much or gets too close to the usual prohibition of Isser Eshet Ach, of the Torah's arayot prohibition, serious prohibition of marrying a brother's wife. So if Yosef said, you should try to encourage people to realize that they shouldn't be doing yibum and do chalitza instead. So if Yosef says, I don't understand what he's talking about, Rav Uziel, Mechilat Kavot Torah, begging his forgiveness, which is just being polite, he's not. It's an odd thing to say, because when we paskin, when the Shulchan Aruch paskin that we prefer yibum, that is adopting the position of Rabbanan in the Mishnah, of Chachamim in the Mishnah, and what they said was that mitzvah yibum is mikol makom. Mikol makom means even if they have negative emotions, even if he thinks she's beautiful, right? Even if that's why he wants to marry her, even if she's got a lot of money, that's why he wants to marry her. That there was a discussion of that in the Gemara, and the opinion that said, no, we prefer Yibum, did not say we assume everybody has right motives. It said that we prefer Yibum anyway, because that's what the Torah said. And the Meiri says that explicitly. Shemitzah Yibum Kodemet, Afilu, even if the man cares about her money or her beauty or whatever it is. The Pasuk says, Yivama Yevo Aleha, the surviving brother-in-law should marry this woman. And Mordechai writes that his way as well. So Rav Yosef had gone further, Rav Uziel had gone further and said that he thinks, according to the opinion of Abishol, so Abishol in the Mishnah says he worries that they're being pogea ba'arayot. He worries that if they have the wrong motives, it's like a brother just marrying a former sister-in-law, which is one of the significant incest relationships in the Torah, produces a karit punishment and leads to the children being mamzerim. Rav Uziel wrote that he thinks that Torah law that Abishol was saying, that if they have the wrong motives, they're literally actually doing that. And the Vayu says, I don't understand, if you look at the Ritva and the Nebuka Yosef, that they are very clear that Abishol is saying it midi rabbana. Now, I think Rav Uziel would not have worried about that, because if he was willing to, he was willing, I think, on occasion to say that he understood the sugya different than the Rishonim and to follow that. But Rav Yosef is saying, but I don't think it's true. And the Shvut Yaakov explicitly says, this is also an important factor, that if they have mixed motives, even Abba Shaul would agree that that's not a terrible situation, that we can allow that to happen. Meaning, even if you said to the brother-in-law, you think she's pretty? You say, yeah, I think she's pretty, but I'm not doing it for that, I'm doing it for you. So the answer is they have two motives there. The Shvut Yaakov says that would be fine. And Abba Shaul, not just the Rabbanu, would say we do Yibum always. Even Abba Shaul would say that's a Yibum that should be allowed to happen. Answer for yourself. If we assume that Jews are good, fine Jews, and they're doing things for the best motives possible, for good motives at least, so even if we're true that they're happy with the way each other looks and they're attracted to each other, nonetheless, it's clearly true that they care about the mitzvah. They're only raising it as an issue because there's a mitzvah here, and there's a mitzvah here, so there's a mitzvah here. And then he has a long parenthesis that I'm skipping mostly, but says that he thinks the mitzvah of Yibum applies not only to the man, to the brother, but to the wife as well, to the widow as well, so that they're both coming in. They're saying, I want to do Yibum. So you say to the woman, oh, but do you think he's going to be a good husband to you? Do you think, is that why you're doing it? You think he's like a good, be a good source of support? You think he's going to treat you well? She said, I think all of that, but that's not why I'm doing it primarily. But sure, that's on the table. That's part of the story. So Rav Yosef is saying, I don't think it matters. I don't think that's what Abba Shaul was worried about. And then he quotes a list of other authorities, B'nai Yeshua, Hafla, Marab Ibn Chaviv,
that he thinks that it should be okay, even with mixed motives.
I'm sorry. Maharam Chaviv was questioning whether or not, or it seems to imply that she herself doesn't have a mitzvah of Yibum. And then there's a Leket Yosha that also seems to think she doesn't have Yibum. So that's some question. There's some disagreement among the authorities as to whether the widow has a mitzvah or not. But either way, he thinks there's enough room here to say that the couple should be able to have Yibum. And then he has some choice words about how it is you unify a nation. He says, if you think you're going to unify a nation by bitul minhagim, by getting rid of customs, you have Sephardi customs or Ashkenazic customs, he thinks that's a completely futile thought. And everybody, he says, should follow their traditions and the customs of their forefathers, as he quotes Ashut Panimi, he wrote, that where they're living, all the people of all the various communities hold on to the customs of their forefathers stringently, to be stringent more, to be lenient more, even by the Surei Torah. He goes a whole list of books of response that I'm not going to get into, that in all cases where there's a machloket, you know, Shkita is one ritual slaughter, how to keep Shabbos, how to keep issues of family ritual, family marital purity, and things like that. Pesach issues, right, whether it's Sephardim eat kidney oat, they follow Maran, they follow Shulchan Aruch, the Ashkenazim follow the Ramah. She's saying about Sidurei Tefillah, about the words that we say in davening, everybody just does there, and the pronunciation and all of that. We all just do it our own way, and it's all fine. Right? That's everybody follows their tradition, and that's what it is. Vain Paris, Vain Yotzeit, Vain Tzvachah. Nobody cares. Nobody's bothered by it. It's not a big issue. And he points to a tshuva of Rav Kook. Rav Kook says, you know, some Ashkenazim want to start eating Sephardi Shechita, and he thinks they shouldn't do it. That, by the way, would be another reason why, if you were going to unify Shechita, you would have to do it by adopting the Ashkenazic rules, because the Ashkenazic rules were more stringent. But the Ashkenazic rules are generally more stringent, then you're going to always be going to end up always asking the Sephardim to give in and to forego, you know, leniencies and permissible actions they used to have, and that's going to be upsetting and annoying. So Rav Yosef is saying, he's quoted this, but he wrote to support his idea that getting rid of customs is not the way that we create greater unity. And the reason he gives is that everybody knows that everybody's got to follow their customs, so it's not a matter of unity. They all follow what they do. And it's Alti Tosh Shvati Mecha and this. And that's a quote from the Panim he wrote. So why is Yibum any different? So therefore he says this idea of a chief rabbinate has no standing, it has no authority, and therefore to get rid of Yibum for the Shvati community, and therefore we don't have to do it, and I would do it, and I've done it, and I think you, Rav Frankel, you can send me them, but you should encourage them to do Yibum, and you should explain to them and encourage them and explain to them how important it is, how valuable it is, what a great mitzvah it is, what a great kindness they're doing to the deceased, and encourage them to have Yibum. So, again, I think that part of the... So when I think about this, I have to say, and I know I'm not. This is not my role here, and I generally don't do it, but I'm coming close to the end of the series. I only have a few more to tape, so I'm getting a little freer with my own opinions, but feel free to email me at grothst@gmail.com if you do or don't like anything about this series. Or just the fact that you're listening, that'll be great encouragement to me. But I wonder about Rav Yosef's comfort with the idea that Jews should have different customs, because I think there's a strong feeling in halacha of lo titko to do that. We think that customs are supposed to be as unified as possible. We have this idea that when people move to a new place, they take on the customs of the new place. So that's sort of that idea got lost along the way when Jews started moving to new places but came as communities and said, no, of course we do what our forefathers say. So there are customs where one is supposed to follow what one's forefathers did, but there are a lot of customs that are dependent on the place that you're living and that you're supposed to do whatever you do in the place that you're living. So since Rav Yosef thinks that Shulchan Aruch, Israel is the land of Maran, he really should have probably been saying and thought to himself that all the Ashkenazi Jews who came here should have been adopting Sephardic custom, should have immediately taken on, dispensed with the rulings of the Ramah, and taken on the rulings of the Shulchan Aruch. Since they didn't do that, he's not willing to give up the Sephardic thing. So that's a hard set of questions, how we create unity. His idea is that everyone can just do their own thing, but that doesn't seem to me to reflect what Halacha really thought of, because if everyone can just do their own thing, there are all these sugyas about whether you can have two courts in one city, whether you can't, what qualifies it, what doesn't qualify it. I think it's a complicated set of issues that Rav Yosef is tapping into here, and he easily has the right to his opinion on it. So his basic opinion is he doesn't think that asking communities to get rid of their customs is the way to forge unity in a country. Rav Herzog and Rav Uziel clearly disagreed. The case at hand was Yibum, and whether or not you would allow people to form Yibum. I think one weakness in the approach that Rav Uziel brought was that Rav Uziel seems to have been too ready, by too, I don't mean that as a judgmental question, overly ready as far as other people were concerned to forego Sephardic customs, and that there could have been perhaps more of a negotiation or a back and forth, a mutuality to trying to forge that more unified view. In any case, you have a responsum of for the first day for Rosh Chodesh Sivan. You're responsible for Rabbi Yosef to Rabbi Yitzchak Yedidya Frankel, the rabbi of chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, saying that as far as Rabbi Yosef is concerned, Yibum should still be allowed and even encouraged in Eretz Yisrael to those people who come from families from Eidot Mizrach, from Middle Eastern communities where Yibum had always been the custom, and to ignore the ruling of the chief rabbinate from 1950 saying that we no longer perform Yibum. This has been a responsive day for the Rosh Chodesh Sivan. Thank you to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwitz, and to David Hakazer for putting the shiurim online and making them available to you. Thank you for listening. Have a great day.